Welcome to a podcast from the Consensus Building Institute. CBI helps groups and organizations around the world negotiate and collaborate more effectively. It is headquartered in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and is online at cbuilding.org.
Hi, my name is Noah Susskind, and I'm talking with Pat Field, Managing Director of CBI. Thanks for joining me, Pat.
Thank you, Noah. I want to talk a little bit about today about public apologies.
Okay.
And why they're important, why they're difficult, what are kind of the key elements of them. And there are so many terrific examples of bad public apologies and a few examples of good public apologies that I think we all can learn from.
All right. So what is and isn't an apology?
Well, it's interesting in looking at the literature about apology generally, and then I'll talk specifically about public apology. There are really kind of five elements that together make up a full apology, and there are often pieces or some of those elements that people use in making what might say is kind of an apology, a half-baked apology, or a partial apology, which may have value if it's not necessarily the whole thing. And those elements are acknowledging the mistake or failure that was made directly, recognizing the hurt, harm, or offense that was caused, taking responsibility for the act, in which such statements as mistakes were made is not achieving that third element, stating clearly some kind of remorse or regret, which may be personal or on behalf of an organization or both, and lastly and importantly, that apology isn't just words, that there needs to be some kind of action or follow through, mitigation, contrition, amends that follows. And all of those things together would make up a full apology. And the notion of a public apology is that those might be apologies that one makes to one's spouse, one's children, one-on-one. And a public apology is, in our definition, really done in a public way, whether that's a large public meeting or whether there's lots of media or it's done through a variety of forms from video to YouTube to TV network news to radio.
So give us an example of a public apology.
So a good example of actually a pretty good public apology that was made by the CEO of JetBlue, which was obviously a low-cost carrier, is a low-cost carrier airline, and it was at one time really the darling of Wall Street. And in Valentine's Day 2007, there were a series of ice storms that grounded numerous aircraft, not just JetBlue's. However, in JetBlue's case, because of a variety of probably management and operational problems, some planes sat on the tarmac for over 10 hours, toilets were overflowing, cold air from doors was open to counteract the stench, there was really nothing to eat but little tiny bags of pretzels. And a lot of the blame came down on JetBlue for failing to tend to those, some very angry passengers. And the CEO of JetBlue really presented a very terrific public apology, really combining all of the elements and doing it very directly, actually personally on YouTube within a very short period of time. Now, an interesting thing about that public apology is if a goal of public apology is to save your job, in this case, that was not the case. The CEO, because of this and other reasons, was actually fired not that long afterwards. I don't think that diminishes from the quality of the apology itself.
Well, I mean, if the point of the apology is to save your job and he didn't save his job, then why should people listen to what you're saying?
That's a very good question. So the question for both individuals and institutions is, what is the purpose of a public apology? And it probably has a number of intents or goals or objectives, some of which may actually contradict each other. So clearly, from an organizational perspective, and I'll talk about ethics in a minute, there's the pure reason that you're trying to save reputation, save brand, reduce or minimize future potential litigation. You're really trying to protect the organization. It may be you're trying to dampen down controversy in the hopes that if you make it, it will go away. It may be you're trying to protect or defend your job or the institution. It may be that you're trying, I think, in what I would say is probably more valuable reasons, but the ones above are just as important in many ways, are restoring relationships, really trying to address social or conscience of guilt for something that was done. And I think an important broader societal value of apologies, if done appropriately and right, is really in restoring or affirming the social order, that apologies are part of making commitments to a set of values by which we or corporations or society or culture values and operates by. And when those values or codes are essentially broached by some kind of behavior, public apology serves an important function in helping to restore that social order.
So can you give us an example of a poorly executed public apology?
Sadly, there are many examples of less than quality public apology. For instance, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, as many people know, struggled to get it right, quote unquote, in the Katrina, post-Katrina hurricane example in New Orleans and the surrounding region. And consequently, roughly a year to 2 years later, there were a set of fires in Los Angeles, and FEMA was working very hard to do much better in terms of communicating with the public, working with the various state and local officials to really address the emergency situation much more effectively, which they did. However, as part of that communication strategy, in a hurry to try to get the word out, they organized a very quickly gathered up press conference. They couldn't actually get the press there in time. So they staged the event as if it were a press conference with FEMA officials up front on stage, FEMA employees asking questions as if they were reporters, and reporters on phone lines not able to ask questions. When the news got out that this actually had happened, people were offended and outraged and irritated, and coming on the heels of Katrina, deeply offended. So the administration made a series of what I would call nested apologies. Each one got better. The first one was by FEMA directly, essentially saying FEMA's goal is to get information out as soon as possible. And in trying to do so, we made an error in judgment, said a statement attributed to Vice Admiral Harvey Johnson. Our intent was to provide useful information to be responsive to the many questions we have received. We are reviewing our press procedures and will make the changes necessary to ensure that all of our communications are straightforward and transparent. So there are a number of reasons why that apology, I would say, falls flat. First of all, an error in judgment might also be classified by many as dumb, foolish, or stupid, therefore kind of masking actually the feeling that people had about the statement. Sort of defending or acknowledging the intent is fine, but really sounds more defensive than apologetic. And the kind of action or effort that they're trying to make to address the issue is to say, we'll review procedures, sounds terribly bureaucratic and not satisfying. Now, what's interesting is after that, the essentially Michael Chernoff, the head of Homeland Security, of which FEMA is now under, made a much more stringent and strong statement, essentially saying it's unacceptable. We don't want to see that happening again. And we're going to take action, including addressing personnel issues if we have to. And the White House essentially said something very similar and a much more effective apology at a higher level, addressing the real problem and how what they were going to do about it.
I am curious to know how you measure the effectiveness of an apology.
That's a very interesting question. I think there's a lot more thinking to be done about that. There's probably a variety of metrics that one could test. One would be, I think, from an ethical standpoint, whether the recipient of the apology, which might be initially a single individual, a group of people, an organization, or a class of people, believes it was an effective apology and sort of says so in the way that they feel about how it was received, which is very qualitative but very important. So for instance, there's a number of examples of apologies in Canada between various churches who ran boarding schools with First Nations who were treated very badly from sexual and physical abuse and otherwise. And those apologies that were made to various tribes and bands and First Nations have differing effect. And those that were better were generally received with stronger feeling and acceptance, quote unquote, than others. And I think that's probably the first test. There are other tests that some might consider crass, but I think are simply practical around, is the brand or reputation of the organization improved over time because of that public apology? Is market share, for instance, in the Tylenol case many years ago,
In
the Tylenol case, there was clearly some tampering by no fault of the company, of an individual essentially putting poison or I can't remember the exact details into the bottle itself. Tylenol, the company, act very, very quickly to yank that from the shelves and address those issues and apologize. There were people who were hurt and acted in a way that was apologetic, fast in action, and quick to try to restore confidence. And within a year or two, their market share was regained. And that's a classic example of one test of a very effective strategy, which included an apology, but there was a lot more to it probably as well.
Any other ways of measuring the effectiveness?
Increasing trust, and that's a difficult and challenging one to measure in terms of the broader kind of goal of social norms or social order, but an important one for us, I think, to think more about how you do that and how you would actually measure that in terms of that piece. And again, I think there's probably a set of criteria which we're trying to lay out about what is a good public apology and to some degree successes. Have you met that test against a set of criteria that would judge the value of a public apology as well?
Okay. If if I'm hearing this and I'm interested in public apologies, but I care just as much about restoring family relations, and I want to know which parts of these elements of a good public apology do or do not translate well into, quote, private apologies between friends, relatives, things like that.
One assumes if an apology is heartfelt, and I'll talk about perhaps the cultural norm that is heartfelt, quote unquote, is like any other form of communication, know your audience is probably the first rule. At the same time, it needs to be genuine. So an awkward, somewhat stilted, and perhaps imperfectly said apology deeply felt in this culture or in my culture, and it probably has more value personally than if you say all the right words, but somehow the person, the receiver, feels like, did they really mean it or did they just practice it a lot? So clearly know your audience, but it has to be genuine. Now, genuine is probably a cultural norm. And in high cultures, quote unquote, or former cultures, such as many Asian cultures and First Nation and Native American cultures, the practice or the form of giving an apology may be more important than the fact that it's heartfelt or not. Whereas in United States culture or maybe European culture, people measure its value to some degree on its genuineness or its authenticity.
Are there other challenges to the art of apology?
I mean, again, I think there's a number of ones we mentioned. There's culture and expectations. There's a cross-cultural or multi-audience problem that your audiences are typically multifold. And what individual or sort of market subsegments of people want to hear is probably going to be different. There's how do you actually do it organizationally? Because oftentimes, particularly for a mistake made in a previous administration or by a large bureaucracy, and there's no one person, quote unquote, to blame, how do you apologize on behalf of an organization versus a person? Because I think the real value to apologies in general is that they are both deeply personal and broadly social and organizational. And how you find to get that just right is a real challenge for folks. Timing is very important. If you do it too soon, you may increase your liability, and you may not have enough information to actually offer it and tailor it to your audience and in a way that it can be received as you wish it to be. If you do it too late, your audience may feel it was forced, you were cajoled, and you don't really mean it. So the timing is very challenging. The form, is it verbal, in front of TV cameras, on YouTube, in writing, in email, in advertising, or in some combination, is one of the challenges to make it effective. One of the things that is clearly a factor in what makes apology difficult and makes so many bad ones available on YouTube, I believe, is the liability question, which is, if apologizing, are you admitting or acknowledging fault or liability? If so, to what extent? And many attorneys will say sometimes better nothing said than saying the wrong thing that can later be used against you in court, which often is a countervailing piece of advice to what many public affairs or relations people would tell you, which is get it out fast. Bad news does not get better with age. And those kind of conflicting pieces of advice cause public apologies to often be very convoluted. Two other pieces that I think are important is oftentimes apologies are meaningful publicly only if they come from the heads of organizations. And chances are people who've spent their career building their career to become head, CEO, major manager of a federal bureaucracy or state bureaucracy, their whole job has been to avoid mistakes, prevent mistakes, downplay mistakes, and the mere ability to actually offer an apology may not be in their skill set, given what their job requires to that point. And in addition, generally people in those positions understandably have very strong, large egos, and apologies may not be part of their manner or character. Lastly, I think there's the challenge of just cognitive barriers, that if you offer one and you mean it heartfelt, but you're considered bad or evil or the terrible corporation or the awful government, there's a thing called reactive devaluation that we know in conflict resolution that generally if people are in elements of very, very low trust or high distrust, and any offer made by one side is often devalued by the mere fact that they don't trust the other side. So offering an apology when you're an institution or entity or corporation that's not trusted by an important audience may make it all that much harder because it's going to be devalued no matter what and how well you do it.
Right. I want to ask you a bit more about what you mentioned regarding the advice of the lawyers, because as I understand it, that's a significant pressure on people who are making public apologies. It, as you says, usually advises to minimize the amount of culpability that you claim for yourself for fear of being sued later. But everything you're saying, especially the examples of the good apologies you've given, emphasize that very culpability that a lawyer or, you know, legal counsel would discouraged. So how do you convince people who are being told by their top lawyers not to do something that they should do something?
There's two or three pieces to this. One is there are elements of an apology that may be valuable without a full apology because of the liability concern. So, for example, acknowledging that hurt or harm has happened could be a valuable piece of what you offer. Not taking responsibility, because that actually potentially means liability. Expressing remorse or regret, if said in the right way, I don't think does necessarily expose you to liability. And maybe most importantly, agreeing to take a step of actions, whoever's fault, quote unquote, it was legally, can be very valuable in restoring or affirming a commitment to making a difference or changing. So I think there are pieces of a public apology that could be made that might protect one against liability without the full sort of suite of the best of public apologies. And I want to acknowledge that this is a real problem. And in some places like New Zealand and Canada at the provincial level, they are really working on legislation that under certain circumstances would allow CEOs, government officials to apologize and actually be protected from the liability implications, just because as we learn and study and know more about apology in general, that we understand its power and its value to do a whole set of things, that it's important to be able to provide legal ways to allow it so it doesn't get sort of bullocked by the legal restrictions.
So you've talked a lot about the person apologizing. What about the apologizees, the people receiving it, the audience?
There's a very, very rich literature in restorative justice and elsewhere that could speak much better than I could to really the idea of what it is to receive, to accept, to forgive. And that's a very rich literature in both, again, restorative justice, religion, ethics. But just to say briefly, there's a variety of ways in which an audience may receive an apology. They may be listening. They may be hearing it and understanding it. They may be accepting it. And they may or may not choose or want to forgive that person or entity or organization for what has been done to them. And there's also ignoring or rejecting an apology. And so one of the challenges of giving an apology is you don't know what the intended audience is going to do with it. And that can be intimidating or frightening or nerve-wracking in a number of ways. And consequently, I think one has to accept that one wants to seek at least understanding and acceptance. Whether forgiveness should be a goal of the apologist, I think, is up for a very large debate. And certainly you're trying to avoid ignoring or rejecting. But just because that might happen doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. And that's one of the challenges of both giving and receiving an apology.
Anything else you want to add?
What I'd like to do is maybe end with what I think is one of the most heartfelt apologies offered in recent times by a federal government official. In the Columbia space shuttle disaster, in which the foam core outer protection area of the shuttle was damaged on launch and in reentry caused the shuttle to burn up and astronauts died, was a terrible tragedy, and also coming not that long after the 9/11 events. Caused, I think, great trauma for the nation. And sometime very shortly after that, in Wayne Hale Jr., who was NASA Launch Integration Manager, one of the key folks involved in the operations and launch and reentry of the shuttle, made this apology, which I think is probably one of the best examples, I think, of a public apology that fulfills all of the criteria that we've spoken about and has a deep sort of heartfelt individual, organizational, and ethical value to it. So let me read that as I finish up. I had the opportunity and the information, and I failed to make use of it. I don't know what an inquest or a court of law would say, but I stand condemned in the court of my own conscience to be guilty of not preventing the Columbia disaster. We could discuss the particulars: inattention, incompetence, distraction, lack of conviction, lack of understanding, a lack of backbone, laziness. The bottom line is that I failed to understand what I was being told. I failed to stand up and be counted. Therefore, look no further. I am guilty of allowing Columbia to crash.
Wow. Pat Field, the Managing Director of the Consensus Building Institute. I'm Noah Susskind. Pat, thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
This has been a podcast from the Consensus Building Institute. You can find us online at www.cbuilding.org.
And this track is called Ladies Younger. by Dewey DeLay.